The Ira Kaufman podcast is on. It is Tuesday. It is the end of February. The Buccaneers season rolls on. I'm Steve Isbitz of Joe Bucks Fan. Lee D. Kemper is here, and the star is in the house, presented by Ed Morse Cadillac Tampa and Ed Morse Cadillac Brandon. There he is, Mr. Ira Kaufman. Now, Ira, before we get rolling here, I just want to confirm that you were not with Robert Kraft. You were not paying $59 half an hour. Can we confirm that?
I drove Robert Kraft. I was the chauffeur, and I got paid more than $59 an hour.
Half an hour.
Steve, we're barely removed from the scintillating Academy Awards broadcast, of which I know DeKemper was glued to his seat for 3.5 hours.
I was watching AAF.
It was so great, I switched to True Detective at 9 o'clock
you
to see
of
the
all
season
people.
Finale, and it was disappointing. And as far as the Oscars are concerned, some Buck fans think A Star Is Born is referring to Ronald Jones in the 2019 season, and I'm here to say that's a long shot.
This is bigger than me admitting I didn't watch the Super Bowl and haven't in 3 or 4 years because of the
Belichick. The fact that I didn't watch the Academy Awards?
You're a man of culture.
I am.
You pay more attention to movies than you do football, I'm convinced.
Lady Gaga was in the crowd. Yes, she was. Yes, she was.
She could be standing in front of me. I wouldn't know who she is.
Well,
she's a blonde.
She always looks different. She always looks different.
Well, that's probably why I didn't recognize her. But, yeah, it's not my cup. She's not my cup of tea. She's not Lita Ford or Samantha Fish. Let's put it that way.
I only saw 2 or 3 of the big movies. So this year it's a little different. Usually I like to see all of them. This year I saw Star Is Born, a Black Klansman, Black Panther.
Black Klansman.
I didn't see Green Book. What's with all the colors over here? Got Black Panther, Green Book. What's going on?
Well,
here?
This shows you how out of touch I am with Hollywood.
And there's Roma. That's a subtitled movie. That's right up your alley. Roma.
Roma, Roma. That well, I know that's Italian for Rome. But who was the Hollywood gossip columnist? Roma. Something
Rona Barrett.
Rona Barrett.
Rona
that's
Barrett.
Rona
yeah,
Barrett.
Yeah, there you go.
And there's like 4 people in our listening audience that know who she is. Rona Barrett. That's
no.
Like...
People love these cultural references, even if it goes back to the 70s.
All right, Ira. Speaking of culture, let me just roll you into the 2019 for a minute. You know, if you were on national radio, as you are often through the season every week with Chris Mad Dog Russo, he would ask you about this Kraft situation.
Please do, because I have an alternate take that's going to shock you.
Now,
I have an alternate take.
In your column on Joe Bucks Fan, of course, you're writing about the Glazers and ownership. You did drop a Robert Kraft, quote, happy ending reference.
Oh.
Now, is that something you think you could have gotten away with at the Tampa Tribune, Ira?
I was thinking about that. I was thinking, you know, Isbitz is going to edit this thing, and he's not going to take it out. Isbitz is not going to take it out, and I don't think you will. It's for mature audiences. Lee, that's what we cater to.
And immature audiences.
May I weigh in on the Kraft situation?
Please do.
All right. Now, first of all, thank God we don't have owners that get on the front page. The only time the Glazers make any
when
news
they do talk.
Is when Ed Glazer is hosting a fundraiser for Donald Trump. Nothing nefarious there. All right.
That we know of.
I'm going to give my take. And there's a guy named Smirkanish, Michael Smirkanish.
Whoa.
He's a CNN broadcaster from Philly. And he said this. He's getting killed. He's getting absolutely killed.
Was it Smirkanish?
And I'm going to back him up a little bit. And his basic point, and I'm going to say it right now. What's the big freaking deal? What is the big freaking deal? And let me explain.
Please do.
Let me explain. It's sordid. It's an embarrassment. But if he's not involved with the real story, which is what these women are, the conditions that the women are working under.
The human trafficking.
He's not charged with it. If he's not involved with it, and just because the guy's a John that walks through the door looking to get off, what is the big deal if he's not involved with the human trafficking?
Well, that's like saying, what's the big deal of someone buying coke on the street? If it wasn't for the guy buying coke on the street, there wouldn't be coke dealers.
Coke's a felony. This is a...
Human trafficking is not a felony?
He's not charged with it. He's not charged with it.
He's a
what's
man?
The big deal of a guy going in and wants to get a hand job?
Ira.
What's the big freaking deal, Lee?
He's a man of means. For an extra 20 minutes of flight, he can go to Aruba and get it legally.
Well, you're arguing about how he gets it. I'm saying the only story here is the human trafficking.
If there's no market with people like Bob Kraft, there's no rug and tug spa.
If he had a hooker at his hotel room, is this a story?
Time out.
Is it a story?
I got to set the stage. Hey, now we are at a popular park in Pinellas County.
So popular, we're the only ones
well,
here.
Well, here's the thing. You guys have your back to where the people are walking by, And when Iris,
somebody just walk with that dog.
When Iris screamed that million-dollar phrase, those people right there were walking by with that nice little dog, and they have no idea what you were talking about. So that was beautiful.
Steve, tell me what I got. Tell me where I'm mixed up here. The story is the human trafficking. If he's not involved with the trafficking, why is this a big story?
Ira, look, come on. You know better than this.
He went to a little seedy, you know, massage parlor.
Okay, well, he's supposed to know
so
better.
So give him his fine and give him his suspension and move on. Move on.
Would you have the same attitude if Joel Glazer got caught in a rub and tug joint?
Yes. Yes.
Well, look, the stupidity.
It's sorted. It's sorted.
The stupidity of it all is extraordinary. It's mind-boggling.
Beyond extraordinary.
When the guy's got $6 billion, if he wants to engage in those activities, he can do it in a way that 99% chance doesn't involve hard criminals. I mean, what does Robert Kraft think? He's Mr. Shield.
He's not naive. Come on.
You know, all the owners are all into the NFL. He understands, who's in charge here? I mean, Robert Kraft's a businessman. Doesn't he think?
He doesn't know that human trafficking's going on. Why should he know that?
Why should he not know that?
Yeah, it's.
I mean, who does he think's running the place?
He goes in, he pays his money, and he gets what he wants.
He doesn't think the Chinese mob's involved?
Let me say this again. You go after the people that are involved with the trafficking.
I agree with you.
Don't go after Robert Kraft. Go after the people.
So what's an appropriate suspension for Kraft?
Give me half a season. It's not going to affect the Patriots. Give it to him. I don't care. But why is this a major story? And stop trying to link him to the human trafficking unless there's evidence that he was involved or even that he knew about it. Then it takes on a different flavor. I'm sorry. I don't see where this rises to some grand condemnation. A guy's going
I don't think you should use condemnation.
Words, rub and tug or whatever it is. If he's got a call girl going to the hotel, nobody says boo about it. Well, and it's probably happening all the time. Yes, I'm talking about NFL owners. Happens all the time.
I'm going to guess the call girl has a little more freedom and liberty than these sex slaves, which they were. Sex slaves.
He doesn't know the background of what's going on.
He's not a naive man, Ira. Come on. It's not like some guy from Pasco County. You're not included.
Some of them are human trafficking and some of them aren't. And he's supposed to know which ones are the difference? What does he know? He doesn't talk to these people. He gives them the credit card, and then he leaves 45 minutes later with a smile on his face, gets back in his limo.
If he's paying with a credit card, then he's got even more problems.
Wasn't it Jerry Springer that bought a businesswoman with a check?
I'm not saying he didn't go in there. They got video. He's in trouble.
I don't know. I would just, look, forget. Yes, I understand what you're saying, and I don't disagree with you on
what
this.
What is this rush to link him to human trafficking? Well, I don't understand.
Because he was apparently intimate with one of these sex slaves.
Because that's it's the extreme stupidity, we have to then assume that...
I didn't say he wasn't stupid.
All right, well, let's just talk about the stupidity of it all. Is this an all-time NFL story with the owner going into
some...
It has
to be.
Well, think about it. We're talking a sleazy...
Well, you got other captains of industry whose names are on that thing. They're all stupid. He's not the only one. You got billionaire hedge fund managers.
I'm talking about the NFL, Aaron.
I understand.
Nobody knows who those hedge fund managers are.
He's put a stain on the shield, so to speak.
Yeah, he did.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah, he did.
I'm going to say it one more time, and DeKemper, I don't care how many times you scream at me. He's not involved with the human trafficking. Go after the traffickers.
Which they are.
For God's sakes. I don't hear anything about any indictments about the traffickers. Where are them? Well, and there's going to be women involved. It's not just a man thing. There are women involved in the operation of this spa.
There's a madame. I get it.
The bust was all about trafficking. So you know, it wasn't about busting these guys coming in for their $60 whatever.
I don't see any mugshots of people that are involved with the trafficking.
Yeah,
where are they?
Have they been arrested yet? They just come down with indictments. And I'm stooping low when I say this. On purpose, I'm stooping low. And this would be a word if you haven't used it, I'm shocked that you haven't. The titillating part is Adam Schefter's claim that Kraft is not the biggest name on that list. Guess who lives about 20 minutes away from that rub-and-tug joint?
I thought of Parcells. I like that term. I thought of Parcells.
Well, I thought of someone bigger than Parcells.
All right.
Who lives 20 minutes away?
Well, you're not going to throw the Glazer name in there.
No.
All right.
Bigger than them.
Oh,
bigger than any NFL
person. He's
talking
about Kraft's friend, Mr. President.
Well, or maybe one of his sons. Didn't one of his sons, he's hanging around with that nasty ex.
They bring somebody to Mar-a-Lago or something.
Well, there, he's got a piece of a brain. What's that chick's name? Used to be married to Gavin Newsom?
Not,
I don't know.
Starts with a G. You told me one time, man, she's had some work done.
I'll tell you one thing. The New York Post is, they're going crazy.
Oh, do you like that
the
story?
The New York Post is going crazy.
Yeah, do you like that story I sent you?
Oh, my God. I think they're checking out the breakers. They got people outside the breaker talking to the lobby people. Kraft likes to hang out with hot
Asians?
Young women.
Asians.
Oh, my
God. Ira, since you do have a relationship with Arthur Blank, Irv.
Guilfoyle, something Guilfoyle.
Kimberly Guilfoyle.
Do you think
she's going out with Donald Jr.?
I mean, the dude's got to have better
she's
taste than that.
She's going out with Donald Jr.
The guy's got to have better taste than that. All right. The women he could have?
We got to start talking about
which
the
is why he
here,
might want to go to an Asian spa.
Well, I'm in some kind of a morass over here, and I got to get the hell out of it.
All right, I'll leave
Arthur. But I spoke my piece about Kraft.
You did,
Give him his punishment. Not that big a deal like people are going nuts about.
Let me keep Arthur Blank out of this. And we got a lot of Bucks stuff on the table, as people saw in the headline. First, Ira, Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa and Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon. Ira, as we get to the end of the month like this, we like to remind everyone, Ed Morse, that's a real name and a real family. More than 70 years serving customers with the highest levels of professionalism across the state of Florida. Ed Moore's Cadillac Tampa, Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon, those are your Hillsborough County Cadillac dealerships. And EdmooresCadillacTampa.com is the website. They're located just west of 275 on Fletcher. They're proud to be the number one volume Cadillac dealer in Florida and a five-time recipient of the Cadillac Dealer of the Year Award. There's a reason for all that, Sage, and you can really get a little taste of it at EdmooresCadillacTampa.com. 0% APR for 72 months for qualified buyers on 2018 CTX, 2018 XT5, and the 2018 Escalade at Ed Moore's Cadillac Brandon, right there on Causeway Boulevard. The Instacash trade event continues through the end of the month, and you want to get to EdmooresCadillacBrandon.com for all the new offers that are going to be coming in March, but also to shop pre-owned and certified Cadillac. EdmooresCadillacBrandon.com. Great stuff. Get to EdmooresCadillacTampa.com and EdmooresCadillacBrandon.com. Sage, Friday, we hear a report, then there are multiple reports, and then Lee's doing his phone calls around town, as am I, and it seems that there's a lot of bite and legitimacy to Gerald McCoy is going to be returning next year. That's the plan at One Buck Palace. Now, I'm going to throw you a theory. I want to know if you believe this or believe in this angle. Jason Light came out at the end of the season and was very lukewarm, almost cold on Gerald McCoy. He, you know, gave his sort of blessing to other guys and was like, well, we got a lot to figure out when it came to McCoy. To me, that said, Light's not really big on bringing McCoy back.
At least not at that price, yeah.
But now it seems, if he's coming back, that's Bruce Arians putting his stamp on the team, saying, hey, I like the film, he's coming back. I'm in charge.
Well, I understand that. Light didn't draft McCoy. Doesn't have any necessary ties to Gerald McCoy. Look, we talked about McCoy's vulnerability, not so much about his diminishment as a football player, because I don't think it's been pronounced. And you could argue that he's in his prime. But more in terms of cap flexibility, Lee. There is a report that McCoy, the decision has been made that McCoy's coming back. This team's a little bit strapped. Let's not forget, there are also strong reports that Donovan Smith's going to get franchised and going to make a hell of a lot more money 2019 than he's made ever before in his life. We know Winston's getting paid this year a lot more than he's ever paid in his life. Of course, the salary cap goes up for all teams, mm-hmm. and that's got to be factored in. But you got Quan is out there. You got Humphreys out there. We don't know what's going to happen. So, Lee, if the decision's been made to bring McCoy back at his price, at his current price, to me, that doesn't give the Bucks a lot of wiggle room going into free agency.
No.
Based on track record, maybe that's a good thing, Lee. I don't want to be cynical, but maybe that's a good thing.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. I think it's safe to assume DeSean Jackson won't be on the roster, which you predicted 2 years ago.
Yes.
He won't be on the roster this fall, so there's $10 million going to help out. You bring up an interesting point. You know, I texted around my sources, and I never thought of it till you mentioned it. When I confirmed, well, I think I confirmed, that I have no reason not to believe I'm getting played, I don't have a reason to believe I'm being played. This person said, yeah, Gerald's coming back, but this person never did mention anything about a salary. So who knows? Maybe they're going to work out something like, hey, we'll give you an extension. give us some cap relief. I don't know that. I'm just guessing.
Happens all the time with other teams.
Yeah.
Happens all the time.
Maybe that is the case. I don't know. Humphreys, I think they're going to miss Humphreys. They let him go. Now, I read Pro Football Rumors. A guy that writes for Pro Football Rumors. He basically said with the Bucs, it's either Donovan Smith or Adam Humphreys, one or the other. Not both are coming back. I think, obviously, I know the importance of Donovan Smith. I think the Bucs are really going to miss Humphreys. They let him go.
I don't think you're wrong. He's a good football player. But as Isbitz has mentioned on this podcast, and I think rightfully so, Humphreys is a good football player, but at what price can you afford Adam Humphreys? And if they get into some kind of a bidding war, you know, you've mentioned New England, Steve. There's other teams that are going to covet an Adam Humphreys that lack a slot receiver. You know, do you want to pay $10 or $11 million for Adam Humphreys? You know, it's a real question.
He's never going to get that kind of money. I think it's a little bit inflated, but there'll be demand for him. They won't get him on the cheap, and they have to at least prepare that he's going to walk. It's very sticky. I don't know. To me, I think it comes back to how does the regime, not us, how do the guys in charge view Chris Godwin? If they really think he's that good, and gosh, listening to Arians back in preseason even, when he called the Bucs game, I went back to listen to that. Huge Godwin guy, and obviously Jason Light's a Godwin guy. Godwin did catch 7 touchdowns last year. And
so you get a cheaper alternative as your number 3 wide receiver.
Yeah.
If Humphreys is
down. My only issue with Godwin is he's not yet consistent. He's got talent.
He had a little bit of a fumbling problem last year, too, Lee.
A little bit. There was like about 4 games, latter part of the season, where he vanished. He was nowhere to be found. And that's one thing I give Humphreys credit about. He was consistent. I'm not saying he's the next Antonio Brown. He may not even be the next Edelman.
He has limitations.
Of course, but he's consistent. And
I like Godwin. I do like Godwin.
Oh, I like him. I like his personality. I like him as a guy. He's a great guy. I love his talent. But, you know, I'd like to see him before they say bye-bye to Humphreys. I'd like to see him put 16 games together. You know, his first year, his rookie year, from what I understand, he was battling allergies. You know, he's from Pennsylvania. It's a completely different climate here, of course, in Florida. And he was battling various medications, and I use the term because I have allergies at times really bad. I use the term drugged out. You know, just Actifed. You're taking Actifed, and you're eating like M&Ms to stop your runny nose. And man, it's like you had a 8 beers or something. And so he battled, and of course he could only use medicines that are legal in the NFL.
Didn't Cutter raise some issues? Maybe Godwin's rookie year with his not his durability
training.
But his stamina?
Yeah.
His stamina.
And that came, and it was because of that. That was because of that. You know, I asked a bunch of people, and that was because of that. So, okay, he figured out his allergy medicine. Well, this year he was dinged up, and that was part of the reason why, he wasn't there in late November and early December. So I'd like to, I think I fall into the same trap a lot of Bucs fans do. You fall in love with your own players. And before we anoint a guy, I want to see a guy put a resume together. Not just hope. You hope that he's going to be X player. Well, let's see it first.
Guys, if McCoy comes back and you use your first-round pick last year on a D-tackle and you got JPP, do you draft another defensive lineman
at
number 5?
And.
Do you?
And.
Where's that guy play?
And. E-N-D, not A-N-D.
Which end?
The right end. The opposite of JPP. Wherever you put JPP, he goes the opposite end.
So Nassib hits the bench. He's the number
who does? Nassib? Yeah, he's just a guy. I mean, everybody's like, the Bucs' pass rush has sucked for so long. We think a guy like Nassib is Lawrence Taylor or something.
I don't think it sucked last year. I thought it was okay.
Prior to last year. Yeah, I mean, we're conditioned for a horrible pass, or no pass rushing, actually. And so when Nassib comes around with 6 sacks, that, by the way, doubled his career high, 6 sacks, we think it's like Lawrence Taylor to come.
Well, so I don't want to be a hypocrite. You know, I've said 87 times on this podcast, you got to build in the trenches, especially this team.
Sure.
And get more physical. But you did draft Vita Vea last year, number 1. So, all right, Lee, if you're convinced that you can get a D-end that's going to be a stud, the guy has to be a borderline pro bowler if you're going to take him at number 5.
I don't care
who the guy is.
I agree.
He's got to be a borderline pro bowler within the first 2 or 3 years of his career.
I agree.
That's what a number 5 guy is.
I agree.
And that's why I've mentioned all these things about Winston. Not that middle of the pack is horrible. And Steve and I basically agree, you know, maybe number 15, number 16.
No, you said 12 to 15.
Well, I said 12 to 15.
No, I'm teasing you. I'm teasing you.
And I'm getting ripped in some cases for taking Cam Newton ahead of him. Cam Newton was the MVP of this league.
Thank you.
Is Jameis Winston going to be the MVP of this league? I mean, that's a reach.
Well, I see what you're saying.
So, anyway.
I don't disagree, but at least Cam Newton, I saw him in a Super Bowl. I've yet to see Jameis in a playoff game. So,
yeah. So you know, what I'm saying is, I'm not going to condemn a defensive end at number 5, but he better be a damn good defensive end, because I'm not sure that that's their number one priority. I'm still an offensive line guy. I think it's got to be bulked up.
Here's what I'm going to ask you about offensive line. If you talk to offensive linemen, you talk to suits who know about offensive line, you talk to coaches, they like to say the offensive line is a unit. It's like a unit. It works as one. If one guy stinks, well, then it's like a domino effect. Could it possibly be that Caleb Benlock was such a rock around the neck that he dragged the entire offensive line down because they had to cover for him?
No, I think that's a stretch. I'm not giving them that. By the way, speaking of the O-line, Lee, and I mentioned this, and I think it's one of the great forgotten developments of last year, and it's not a positive one. At best, the O-line was mediocre. And Steve's heard me say this before, they had remarkable consistency in terms of starting and health.
Mm-hmm.
Remarkable.
Mm-hmm.
You can't expect that again. Suppose Marpet goes down.
That's a valid point.
Suppose Jensen goes down. I mean, they don't have any depth. They need a starter at right guard. They might need a starter at right tackle. They got a lot of work to do, and who says that? Mr. Bruce Arians.
All right, Sage, let me take you back to the D-line a little bit. I'm going to throw you into the mind of Jason Light. And what happens is the general managers, not necessarily the coaches, but the general managers, they force themselves to fall in love with a few inexpensive players on either side of the ball because they have to, right? Because you just can't pay everybody well in every position. So they have to fall in love with guys and go all in on some guys that are inexpensive and, who they think are on the rise. And I think Nassib falls into that category. I think Jason Light's like, all right, where am I going to go cheap here? And I it's got to be Nassib, and we're going to go all in, and he's our guy. And I just think their mindset is he's the starter, you know, and if they can get the DN, the super DN, they'll take him. It doesn't mean that guy won't beat out Nassib, but I think they're very comfortable there because they've convinced themselves they have to be. And, a lot of Bucs fans might not like it, but Nassib will like it. But he's 25, he's big, he produced, they see him as versatile. Maybe he didn't get a shot in Cleveland behind all these big names they were drafting. So, I don't know. That's kind of interesting.
No, let me
also,
go
I just wanted to go back.
Go
I wouldn't hesitate to draft a defensive tackle at all.
At
number 5, yeah. Because
even with McCoy and Vieira?
Sure, because the Bucs aren't winning the Super Bowl next year. So if they're going to keep McCoy, and you think he's a good influence on Vea, and you think he's a good influence on the next guy, then just draft his replacement now.
Isn't that a hell of an expensive assistant coach to have?
No, they'll play him. I don't think they'll have any problem rotating the guys, and they know McCoy will probably miss a couple of games. Vea hasn't proven to be durable. I wouldn't hesitate. If you like the guy, if you rank him and he belongs there, you can't pass on an Aaron Donald-esque player just because McCoy has 1 year left.
Well, you think Bo Allen's soon to be out the door? Where do you stand on Bo Allen?
I hope he's renting. I have nothing against the guy. You know, by the way, a lot of our listeners and a lot of our readers, when you say something negative about a guy, oh, you hate him. No, I don't hate him. I'm just being honest here, you know? Yeah, I hope he's renting because I think you could pick up someone off the street better than him. He was nothing. An expensive nothing.
Yeah, I just look at it, Sage. Look, McCoy, is he breaking down? Is it fair to say he's starting to break down? Yeah, sure. Vea, do we know if he's durable? No. You know, he played, 5 good games? The guy, if you really love the guy, I don't think you can pass on anybody in the trenches. If whoever you think is the best on either side of the ball in the trenches, I hope that's who they take at 5 if they don't trade down.
I can't imagine them keeping McCoy if they draft the tackle. I really can't. I mean, that's such a drag on your salary cap.
2 years in a row you're drafting a D-tackle.
Well, it's not, yes, but here's the thing. You know, we were just talking about the guy's $13 million. He eats up a lot of salary, and you're going to draft the defensive tackle at number 5, and he's either going to be riding a pine or McCoy's going to be playing less. You're paying him $13 million, and you suck.
You know who's getting a lot of draft love is a running back out of Alabama who doesn't have a lot of tread on him. Certainly, they're not going to take him at number 5. You think there's any chance that guy could last till early in the second round? Steve?
That's hard to say.
Some people love that kid, Lee. Getting a lot of play.
Outside of wide receivers, Alabama players spook the hell out
and
of me.
I know
especially
and I know you're not happy with Buck running backs.
No.
You're not satisfied at all with
no.
Buck running backs.
FIU or FAU, I can't remember which. Singletary, not to be confused with Mike. He looks like a decent second-round pick. I don't know about first. And, you know, say what you will about Greg Gabriel. You think he's, you know, worthy of listening to or not? A former Bears scouting director, now he's like a Twitter draft guy because he doesn't have anything else better to do. And he says Singletary will be a good running back, not a great one. He's like he's lukewarm with him. He'll be okay.
Any chance Ryan Griffin sticks around, Steve?
Sure. Sure, I think they might give him a chance to compete for the backup job. Look, everybody goes in with four quarterbacks, and Griffin's got to know, hey, this is as open job as it gets.
Now, Arians has never seen him. Never seen him.
Correct. But we're talking about picking a third and fourth quarterback. If I'm Griffin and I'm on the market and I have a few shots, the Bucs are a good place to be a backup because Jameis hasn't played a full season since 2016.
And they could move on from Winston.
And the backup job is open. They might move on from Winston if he had a horrible year. So it's an attractive place, and obviously he feels comfortable here. Sage, I want to throw you back into the world of money. And this came up in a weird kind of way last week. Tyrann Mathieu, the Honey Badger, he's going to cost probably $8 million a year, the most the Bucks would have paid for a safety since DeShone Goldson. Eric Reed just got $7-plus million a year.
Did you have to mention Goldson by name on my podcast?
Well, it's one of the great stories. It's one of the great I told you so's in Bucks history. It goes back to your column where somebody you quoted somebody saying, hey, the Bucks don't know what they're doing. They signed DeShone Goldson, a bone-crushing, head-hunting safety, exactly when the NFL was getting rid of bone-crushing, head-hunting safeties. Only the Bucs would do such a thing. But anyway, Ira.
And he was surrounded by a lot of talent in San Francisco.
Tyrann Mathieu.
A lot of talent.
Tyrann Mathieu, 26 years old. He's out on Twitter. He responded to the Bucs, a tweet about the Bucs bringing back Gerald McCoy, something like, you know, good signing, a good move.
That's a win.
That's a win. And O.J. Howard responds, and it sure looks like Mathieu's coming here. It sure looks that way.
It kind of looks like a done deal.
But Ira, here's the thing. We know he's a good player. He's versatile. He's done all this stuff. Arians, whatever. Connections, polls. But he's going to make top dollar. So that puts another wrinkle. It limits your flexibility elsewhere. If Tyrann Mathieu's the call, what else do you think they do in free agency?
Well, if that's the call, it doesn't speak well for the second round pick from a couple of years ago at safety. Doesn't
which I've been saying for
about 2 years.
If
that guy was a stud, a stone-cold stud, you wouldn't be paying top dollar for Tyrann Mathieu.
That's a good point.
Familiarity, you can't underscore it enough, Lee. You know, every time The Silence of the Lambs, there's another cultural reference for you. Every time
I actually saw that movie.
Every time that movie comes on and there's a scene with Clarice Starling.
I don't know who that is.
That's the Jodie Foster.
Jodie Foster, okay.
And
pants wearing.
She's dying to, you know, get clues about Buffalo Bill and then
Buffalo Bill.
Yeah, he's the latest
serial killer.
I didn't know it was Buffalo Bill.
And she wants Anthony Hopkins to help her, you know, find him. And
he didn't catch the pants reference.
And finally he decides to give her some clues and he says, "What is it that you covet? You covet. COVET. You covet what you see."
Thanks for the spelling.
You covet what you see. Now, again, let's not talk about Robert Kraft and that freaking day spa. You covet what you see. And by that,
I mean, you didn't see.
You covet what you're familiar with. You know, if I write the great American novel, which ain't going to happen, I'm not going to write about being in the construction business because I can't put a nail in the wall. You know, so you covet what you see. And what does Bruce Arians see? Guys that he's familiar with, guys that he's comfortable with. It started with Ellington. We talked about it last week. It ain't going to end with Ellington.
No.
And it may not end with Mathieu. There might be others, too.
Well, it started with these coaches. You know, there's guys that are basically out of the NFL, but Arians knew him.
Yeah. So, Steve, it seems to me that he should be older than 26. Seems like he's been around a long time.
No kidding, doesn't it?
Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Seems like he's been around. He's a versatile player. You know, the guy's not Earl Thomas at his peak or Cam Chancellor, but he's a good player, and God knows they need help in that secondary.
Before he blew out his knee, he was right up there with Earl Thomas.
You know, and you know, I think Lee made a good point last week, Steve. I got to give him, you know, by accident, he makes a good point, you know, once every four podcasts. You talked about drafting a cornerback in the first couple of rounds. I mean, how much capital are you going to spend, Lee?
Well, that's
Hargraves and two guys last year in the second round. I mean, are you going to say I misfired on everybody? So,
Ira, does Bruce Arians care about past capital?
He's got to work closely with his man.
That's not what I asked you. Does he give a crap about what the Bucs drafted previously?
No, but he's got light talking in his ear saying this Carlton Davis is going to be a heck of a player. Bruce, heck of a player.
It's naive to think otherwise, that he does care. Has to. I mean, why is he here? Jameis Winston. Who drafted Jameis Winston? Come on.
Ah, that's nice for you to back me up once in a while.
I mean, he's got to care. It's his roster. It's his salary cap. If he doesn't care, I mean, that's
like
Bill
Coach
Junior
High
School. But I do
understand Steve's point.
No, I mean, the past investments of the player, I don't think he can afford to care. That's a losing mentality for the head coach. I hope he doesn't care. He can't be worried about Light's reputation.
On that regard, he might want to replace Donovan Smith. How do you like that?
I know. You know what I mean?
When you say doesn't care, do you mean – he doesn't care about his roster. Or he doesn't care who was drafted in the past.
He doesn't
care.
Yeah,
I mean, who was where they were drafted and the investments and
how much
and all
money
that.
They're making.
Yeah, I mean, if
investments, yes. Investments, yes, because that's salary cap. But who was drafted where? No coach thinks that. I don't care who they are.
Sure. Yeah, that's what I'm saying is I mean, if he doesn't like MJ Stewart and Vernon Hargraves and Carlton Davis, if he doesn't like those guys, well, you know, he could just very easily tell Jason,
or Quan Alexander,
get what you can get for him. We'll draft a corner. We'll sign this guy, and away we go. I don't think I don't know. I just don't feel how it factors for Bruce Arians if I'm sitting in his brain trying to in his office. I don't know if it matters to him.
What kind of leverage, Lee, what kind of leverage, if any, does Quan Alexander have?
None.
Heading into free agency?
None. He was a middle linebacker on one of the worst defenses God has ever seen. And when he left with the injury, the defense got better, and he blew out his knee. He's got no leverage, I don't think, nor should he. People think, oh, you hate Quan. No, I don't. I really love him. I love everything about him except for production. How many times have we heard Dirk Cutter? It's a production business. It's a production
business.
Could
another team covet Quan Alexander?
Someone working in an Oriental spa in Jupiter could covet Quan Alexander. Of course, it could.
All right, Buffalo Bill Kaufman over here. All right, look.
But I don't think he has any, nor should he have any leverage with the Bucs. I mean, for all the intangibles, you could say, oh, wait a minute here. Middle linebacker, most important position, you could argue, on the defense outside of an edge rusher. And you called the defenses, and your defense was horrible. Period. Horrible. Not kind of bad. Horrible. Like NFL worst in history. Horrible. So, and you blew out your knee. And we haven't seen you take one snap since you had knee surgery.
You're right. One more point I want to add about possibly taking
an
edge rusher at number five. We talked about Nassib. Lee, you made it. You quoted somebody, and I think they're absolutely right. I agree with this person 100%. Now you got to tell me who said it.
But, if I remember.
Given the rules, and they're not going to change the rules.
Yeah, I know.
They're not going to change it. Mm-hmm. We see with the trend of the last 10 years. It's not going backwards. They like the points. They like 45-42. That ain't going to change. There's too much pressure on the corners and the safeties and the linebackers to cover these guys. You got the back circling out of the backfield. Who the hell can cover Alvin Kamara? Yeah. Can't do it. Kareem Hunt to an extent. Can't do it.
Cheetah.
So what's the answer? Put the quarterback on his ass. That's the answer. Who said it, Lee?
Lewis Riddick.
Who makes a lot of good points.
Yeah, he does make a lot of good points.
He does make a lot of good points.
And like his point, if you can't get the quarterback on his back, you force him to make a rotten throw. That's Dee Ford and the Chiefs. Perfect example.
Hey, in a perfect world, I don't want to misrepresent myself. In a perfect world, the Bucs walk out of the draft with an elite edge rusher. That would be just beyond perfect. And nobody.
And JPP's not getting any younger either, Steve.
Exactly.
No, but he's an interesting situation because he is. Are they going to move him around? Is he going to go back to left defensive end where he played with the Giants? Is he going to want to flip-flop? Is he going to want to stay on the right side? We don't. The new edge rusher stud out of college might just be a right side guy.
That's right.
Or a left side guy. It becomes very interesting there.
I don't think they moved JPP around enough for my taste until towards the end of the year. They started. Duffner started using his flexibility.
Who was that?
Duffner.
Not
Smith.
Yeah.
Smith. I thought he had him lined up at right end. Everybody knew where he was going to be. You got somebody that versatile, move him around.
That's a good point because there's a key on him. Yeah.
I'm glad you mentioned Duffner, Ira, because it's going to bring me to the latest from Kwan, who was on Sirius over the weekend. And here's, first, before I get to the Duffner part, here's what Kwan said. They asked him point blank. And I love the ex-players as hosts on Sirius because they ask direct questions. You know, most of them don't just beat around the bush with stuff. So Alex Boone, who played guard for Arians in Arizona, asked Kwan, you know, you think you're coming back? Are they telling you to come back? What do you think? You're going to play for the Bucks next year? You know, no beating around it. And Kwan said, quote, it's just up in the air. My agent, Drew Rosenhaus, is working on everything. We're in talks with the Bucks. They're talking right now. We're just going to see what happens in free agency. So that's basically the headline today. Kwan is going to test free agency. That's his plan. And he didn't sound like a guy who, you know, expects to be a Buccaneer, but he is at the facility every day, he explained. Now, one thing he did drop in there, which I thought was, you know, was kind of sad and interesting at the same time, he said, I hope Duffner gets a job. I hope he finds a job soon. He's a great coach.
For him
so,
to mention that.
You know, I didn't know if Duffner might have retired, but Kwan made it seem like maybe Duffner is out there looking and nobody wants him, which is pretty darn telling.
You know, the way I interpret Kwan's remarks, it kind of backs up your point, Lee, that from a Buck perspective, if you let him test free agency, where all it takes is one or two suitors to set the financial bar, I think the Bucks are comfortable that he's not going to be pursued that fervently in free agency. If they thought he was, either that means they don't have put a lot of stock in him or they don't mind letting him go. I mean, the fact that they're going to let him test free agency, in Kwan's own words, that kind of tells you they don't think he's got a lot of leverage.
That could be. Like I say, you know, I love all the intangibles that Kwan has. But just because we like him, you know, he's a cartoon character, he hits hard, good teammate, let's not pretend he's the next Ray Lewis. He's, you know,
Boy, the Bucks have
you
some
want him to play. You want him to be that guy, but want and is two different
boy,
things.
Boy, the Bucks have some real questions at linebacker, Steve. I mean, real physical questions.
Oh, huge questions, because if you are going to let Kwan walk in your mind, like, all right, well, if he goes, he goes. Maybe we work something out. But what do you got at linebacker? Not much. And I think the return of McCoy and then this whole situation with Kwan, I think it's obvious the Bucks are going to be very comfortable playing a 4-3 defense this year. There'll be a lot of hybrid stuff and moving around, but I mean, if you need four linebackers and you're letting Kwan walk, you're starting from scratch, basically, except for Levante David. You don't know anything about Beckwith and these other guys.
You know, if Beckwith was totally healthy and hadn't had the ankle injury, Kwan could be gone.
Yeah,
absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah, Beckwith, I hope I'm dead wrong, but I don't expect him to take another snap for the Bucks.
Yeah.
I hope I'm dead wrong.
You know, until he hit that rookie wall, boy, he had a very good year at a position that traditionally, in the Buck defense, doesn't make a lot of noise, that strong side linebacker.
Well, the good thing for Beckwith is that this is his third year, so he'll be cheap for this year and next year, so he'll probably be here for two more years trying to get healthy. If he comes back, they'll get what they can out of him, and he's too talented to just let him walk and not see if he can. Maybe he needs a whole extra year to recover.
Probably a good decision not to force him into the lineup.
Absolutely.
Last December. Probably a smart decision.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
All right, Ira, speaking of smart decisions, maybe we'll call this a sane decision or an insane comment. I don't know. Tony Dungy, we'll close with this, Sage. Tony Dungy was on Channel 10. He did an interview with Channel 10.
He's got a new book out. He's plugging a new book, I think.
They just put online the snippet about the Bucks, and he compared Jameis to Peyton Manning.
You better explain that. You better explain that.
Well, simply stated, Dungy said when he looks at Jameis, he thinks about when Dungy arrived in Indianapolis, he met a very up-and-down quarterback. Now, obviously, Peyton Manning's highs were a lot higher than Jameis's were in his first 4 years. But he's met an up-and-down quarterback who didn't really understand that, you know, he could lose the game for the team, and you got to protect the ball more than you think you do. And Dungy explained that he coached that into Manning, and he got it and took off from there. So I was pretty strong, and he believes Jameis has all the tools, and we'll get that coaching from Bruce Arians. What do you make of all that?
I don't think I could think of two more disparate quarterbacks than Peyton Manning and Jameis Winston. Lee? Winston's instinctual. When he's pressured, he reverts back to what was successful for him in college when his teams owned a huge talent advantage. He moves better than Peyton Manning.
Much better.
Much better. Pocket presence. But in terms of accuracy, you know, he's not going to be a 68% completion percentage machine like Manning. I'm not sure he studies film like Manning. I don't know who does. Peyton Manning in his prime. You know, I don't see the comparisons, but Tony coached Manning and won a Super Bowl with Manning. Manning's going to Hall of Fame. He's in the top 10 quarterbacks all time. That's high praise, high cotton, Lee. So,
like Dungy, he was a rotten postseason quarterback.
If he's three quarters of the quarterback that Peyton Manning turned out to be, Buck fans will be very happy.
Oh, sure. And I actually see similarities between the two. Not like Dungy does, but, and I'm sure some people ran off the road when I saw that. And there's probably some people in the Tampa Bay area have to buy new mailboxes as a result of what I just said. I can see some similarities. Stats wise, his stats are Jameis's first 3 years, not that disparate. Manning, Jameis is a junkie, Manning was obsessed. I mean, they're both like bookworms when it comes to film guys. Jameis is a junkie. Manning was obsessed. Manning, like you said, I don't think he could top his work ethic. You know, they probably had to tell the guy to go to sleep at 3 o'clock in the morning. Jameis is up there, but Manning may be the best. So there's some similarities. You know, obviously both are number one picks. Both were incredible college quarterbacks. But I don't think they're as disparate as, let's say, Lamar Jackson and Peyton Manning. That would be a disparate.
Understood.
Now, here's one for you along these lines. I ran this article Monday morning on JoeBucksFan.com, and I talked with Steve Mariucci during Super Bowl week, and I asked...
You hoard these things like chestnuts, man.
Oh, yeah.
And you drop them like little breadcrumbs.
There you go. Like, yeah, exactly. I asked him, like, you know, could there be any way they could resolve the issue between DeSean Jackson and Jameis Winston? And first thing Mariucci said, I never experienced a wide receiver not liking his quarterbacks. Sarcasm, Ira, sarcasm. You know, because he had that idiot Terrell Owens.
Yeah, he had Theo. He did.
He was telling me, he goes, man, the Bucs have some really good players. What are we missing? Cutter said that 2 years ago on Hard Knocks. That was partially, he doomed himself by saying that. Then you have Father Dungy last year. Oh, there's no doubt in my mind this team's got talent to make the playoffs. Mariucci, who was a decent coach himself. Remember, he was Team Glazer's first choice as coach to replace Dungy, not Chucky. And he comes out and says, oh, man, they got some good players. Did the Bucs have that bad? Lovie Smith notwithstanding, he was inept. But outside of Lovie Smith, are the Bucs coaches that awful that they got this talent and they can't turn this thing around?
Look, nobody's going to argue the Bucs have the most talented roster in football. The question is, were they more talented by a wide margin over going 5-11 the last two seasons? I would argue they had 8-8, 9-7 talent, and the coaching didn't get the job done. I would say that the roster, and I've said this before, from a talent level, I don't think it's spread out evenly throughout the roster.
That's fair.
They're overwhelming in terms of targets, especially when DeSean Jackson was going crazy with Fitzpatrick. You got the two tight ends, and then you got Jackson, Evans, Godwin, you know, and
Ronald Jones.
That's a lot of targets.
Yeah. Drops off to Ronald Jones and Jackie.
And then not very good in the trenches, Steve. Not very good, out-physicaled. No badass football team like Cutter wants. They didn't have it. No running game. So it's a lopsided talent roster. It's Arians and Light's job to get more talented in the secondary. I don't see a lot of talent in that secondary. Thus, here we go with the Honey Badger. You got to add some talent back there. Right now, you got bodies. Bodies doesn't equal talent. The O-line is not good enough. The running backs aren't good enough. So that's the challenge going forward, Steve.
Wild week. Next week, Lee will bring us back all of his...
Yeah, we want some nuggets from the Kemper when he comes back.
His atmosphere and nuggets and all kinds of stuff from the combine. Sage, it looks like you're ready for the tennis court, so I will let you take us out of here with a farewell 20 seconds.
All right, here's my 20 seconds. The Kemper, we're going to weigh you in when you get back from Indy.
200 pounds.
And you are going to test positive for pastrami. That's my final word.